Greetings, this is Joe Barry from Barry Investment Advisors, and this is our fourth update on the current crisis that we're dealing with. We understand the human toll that this is taking and the frustration that all of us are feeling. But it's our job to protect and grow the money that you've entrusted to us. And that's what we'd like to cover once again today. And to help us, we have our analyst, Dan Pinheiro, who is a research analyst with Barry Investment Advisors. And I'm going to turn it over to Dan, and he's going to guide Patrick Barry, myself, and Kate Alves through questions that we know are on your mind. Dan?
Thank you, Joe. Pat, let me start off with you. Could you discuss what are the implications and effects from the massive stimulus that has been implemented recently? And will the massive stimulus have a positive or negative impact?
Thanks, Dan. Well, we just had a large bounce from what was the March 23rd low in the market. And so that seemed to be attributable to the actions of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury. We've seen a number of actions that most of you are familiar with, including up to $6 trillion in 5 new accounts that the Treasury has authority over, where it used to be the Federal Reserve who would do quantitative easing. And we're also seeing the various programs for small businesses and for individuals as far as that cash payments, and looks like those are starting to hit. The small business loans are starting to hit. So that has helped in a major way calm the bond market down. There was a lot of trouble in the bond market, and just basically settle investors down. The market is a discounting mechanism, and when there's massive uncertainty, things like are there going to be 15 million people that won't pay their mortgage? Or are these big hospitality companies going to pay their interest? I mean, there's a lot of big questions that started to come out of this. When are we going to reopen? How bad is the virus toll going to take? I mean, in March, the market was trying to digest a lot of these things, and they were reacting to the news events. I think what was positive about this time period was that they acted pretty quickly, especially compared to 2008. A lot of the stimulus took a lot more time to come through than it did this time. So I think that we've seen the initial effect, which is one, it settled down corporate bond interest rates and just the bond market in general. And we have to keep in mind there's still a lot of debt in the economy. There's a lot of corporate debt. So if those debts go bad, that has an additional impact on the job picture. So I think that the Fed and the Treasury, some of them calling Feddy now, but they did what they should have done on time. But I think the implications are, they can't buy every asset in the economy and in the markets, and we don't really want them to. But I think the initial positive impact was it settled people's nerves down in the markets. But I also think that it's not clear what the next steps are for that. So I think that it's going to be varied. There's going to be winners and losers in the market. But overall, what they've done has been received well by the market.
Thanks, Pat. So while it sounds like the Fed and the Treasury, they acted quickly to calm markets and maybe have had some success there, it sounds like there are many unanswered questions on how the COVID-19 crisis will play out. So it's a good transition to Joe. And Joe, are there any historical lessons that serve as a rough roadmap for the current situation?
This reminds me of the behavior that I witnessed with my parents, and many of you probably have were impressed with the behavior of your parents or your grandparents who were tainted by the experience of the Great Depression. My dad, who was part of the greatest generation, hated debt, never wanted to buy anything that he didn't have the cash for. He didn't even like having a mortgage. And I know everybody on this phone call has family members that had that behavior. And that behavior was caused by witnessing or experiencing when you couldn't pay your bills, how horrible that was an experience. And so the generation that came out of the Great Depression always made sure they had savings and never bought something that they couldn't afford. Well, I don't think the behavior is going to be quite as extreme, but I would expect there to be long-lasting changes in the way people spend money and save. Generally, coming out of a severe recession like this, people increase their savings. And when they increase savings, it means they're not spending. Also, companies that have been traumatized because they did not have enough cash on hand, they were way, way over indebted with loans that they are experiencing an inability to pay. Chances are companies are going to be a lot more conservative, not so quick to be buying back shares, looking to reassure their lenders that they have cash reserves and financial stability to make their obligations. This is going to be a long-lasting change, in my opinion.
So it sounds like that given there could be long-lasting changes to savings and spending at both the consumer and corporate level, how does this translate into what sectors and industries stand to benefit from changing consumer trends? Do we expect any of these trends to continue after all this passes? Let me pass that question to Kate.
Personally, for me, I think we're going to see part of the recovery really be dictated by consumer spending and really where they're going to align their dollars with. And I do think this is a game changer for many households. We talk about the needs versus wants that households are going to need going forward, and probably we'll be putting more emphasis on the needs and not so much the wants. So I do think the consumer is going to play a key role in how this evolves going forward. And there's still a lot of unknowns in terms of, as Joe mentioned and Pat mentioned, like what's going to happen with the economy underneath and in terms of people going back to work. That I think is going to be a big driver of how consumers really think about their spending habits going forward. But I do think it's going to be different for a lot of households than it was, literally just 2 months ago. It's hard to believe our lives were so different such a short time period ago. So, but I do think this will sort of evolve over time as, people go back to work and jobs are, put back into place. And I think it's just going to be a process that we're all going to have to work through going forward.
Over 75% of the world's economy now is outside of the United States. And each region of the world is dealing with this in their own specific way. We still have 2 to 3 billion people in this world that don't have washing machines. In fact, billions don't even have electricity. The emerging world still looks like the biggest growth sector long term. Now, they're in turmoil like everybody else is right now, but we need to keep a global view as to opportunities, not just a US-centric view. And the U.S. market has outperformed international markets now for about 10 years. It may very well be that we see more opportunities outside of the United States over the next 10 years than we do locally. So we need to not only think about the sectors that are going to do better, but what regions, what geography are places that we want to have represented in your portfolio. Pat, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think nobody knows the future for sure, and there's a lot of questions about, I talked about the stimulus earlier, and one of the big questions about the stimulus is it going to cause more inflation? Is it going to be deflation? And there's a tug of war taking place. But, as the rest of the world increases, and should the U.S. dominance deflate somewhat, it could cause more inflation for us and potentially some a lower dollar. And so that's just something that could that could help the foreign community. And you're right, there's billions of people that still want to have a better standard of living, and this is probably going to be a decent step back for China right now. But there's a lot of countries in Asia, and maybe there'll be a change in Europe. We'll see what happens. But I still think the U.S. is it was a $20+ trillion economy before all of this, and what we do certainly affects the world, and there's tons of opportunity here, and we'll see if how much supply chains are going to come back to the U.S., how much manufacturing. But in terms of sectors, I think technology, that it's been surprisingly resilient through this, because in 08 and other recessions, they tend to get hit really hard, but they're looked at as more of the infrastructure of the country, at least some of the names are. So that's something to keep focus on. I mean, I'm not the shopper in my family, but I'm not sure how many shoppers out there, even though in general, there may be some subdued shopping. There's probably some people that are going to be really happy to go back and go shopping. I think food service, there was $900 billion in restaurant sales that supposedly hundreds of billions are shifting to the grocery stores. So it'd be interesting to see how much sticks there. And you have e-commerce in general. I mean, it's a sad thing about the retail state of this country, but the companies that are selling online, I mean, we even have a client that does grocery service, and he has switched to e-commerce, which I don't think he ever envisioned doing that. So it's an adaptable time. I think that a lot of sectors are seeking to adapt, and it's going to be interesting to see how the economy shifts from a more like basic needs, healthcare related spending back to the other areas. But I do think everybody being home so long, they're probably rethinking, what do I really need? Like, I was able to get by with all this extra spending and events and everything. So maybe there'll be some rethinking of spending patterns and probably less in general.
So it sounds like there's just a lot of adapting upcoming, whether it's on the consumer front or the corporate side. There are lots of changes, and a lot of these current events still have to filter out, and we'll see where they end up. One thing I can attest to since joining Barry 5 months ago is the sharp focus and prudent investment management that we put on our clients' portfolios. Protection of our clients' assets is the cornerstone of everything we do. With that said, Kate, would you like to discuss how Barry positions its clients' portfolios to protect them from extreme volatility?
Sure, Dan, thank you. So generally over time, when we think about volatility, and I know we've all experienced that at some point in time, we have usually used what I call the sort of the overall temperature of the market to really shift our clients' asset allocation. So when we think about when the temperature is hot or when it's expensive, like what we saw earlier this year and last year, we tend to decrease our weightings in the market and allocate higher to, bonds having higher cash weightings at that point, since both of these really can buffer and protect the portfolio against the downturn. And then the reverse would be true when we have a cheaper market based on historical valuations, we would allocate higher into the markets. And then as most of you know, we have used gold and precious metals to sort of complement our allocation, and again, use that as well to manage volatility. And basically, we just really adjust these levers over time, depending on, again, the strength or weakness that we're seeing. I would say sometimes these adjustments can be made quickly, but then there are other times when those decisions need to be more slower in nature, more thoughtful, more methodical. And I would say with the recent downturn that we've had this year, we've definitely been more strategic in our deployment of capital into the market, with the buys that you've probably seen so far that we've done. And then we'll continue to move monies in as we see weakness in the future. I think speaking for all of us, obviously none of us really know what the future holds, but I know we've talked a lot about what companies we would love to own going forward. And the emphasis definitely is going to be on identifying companies that have clean, strong balance sheets, they have nice cash flow, and really have what I would say solid brand recognition when you think about the names that we put in. So that would be my overall sort of summation on how we protect you all during these more challenging times in the market.
I just say that usually recessions can last anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half, and we don't really know the full impact of this. So we're looking at methodically buying over the course of the year, and it could be a very bumpy year. And should we get further weakness, we do expect to move in more aggressively, you know, should that happen. So we're really, you know, following things closely, and that's the approach we're taking at this time.
Thanks, Pat. So aside from portfolio management, what can our clients and investors do to stay calm during times like these?
I'll comment a little bit about that. Maybe Joe and Pat, maybe you want to add something in at the end as well. And I guess I would just start with, I know obviously this is a difficult time for everybody. Our lives have really, as I mentioned earlier, changed dramatically in the short term. But I think when we think about the changes that we're facing and the challenges that we're thinking about, it's really twofold. You know, we have the financial piece, and then we have the personal piece with the social distancing and the quarantining and everybody sort of, you know, staying at home and not doing as many things as they used to. In terms of the financial piece, I would say your team at Barry is here to really, you know, guide you through this the best way we can. We're obviously a team member with you, and we're going to continue to do that. None of us really have a crystal ball, but, you know, obvious things is, you know, staying the course, not, you know, moving in and out quickly. And then again, moving money in on weakness and sort of dollar cost averaging in. And then our goal really is to just take advantage of opportunities that can present itself when we have volatility. That's usually when some opportunities will come up. When we think about the market, when you reach a point where you have a lot of pessimism in the market, that is usually the best time to buy. The only other thing, when we think about, you know, a bear market, which obviously we're, you know, headed into and they're not fun, they shouldn't be a surprise to everybody, although when we do experience them, they can all be somewhat different. They can be a little unique. They can all have their own challenges. But there is one thing that they do all have in common, and is that basically they all come to an end at some point. So this too shall pass, and it will leave behind what I hope will be some very good opportunities for your portfolio.
Well, I'll just wrap it up. We have, you know, there's 13 of us. We're all available by phone. You don't hesitate to call. We love hearing from you. Usually when you have a question, there's another 100 people that have the same question on their minds. So don't hesitate to reach out to us. You know, we have our periodic reviews, but anytime we are happy to do our best to follow up. Our regulatory materials are available on our website. Also, you can call the office. And let me just say thank you, and we hope to do more of these as we have more information to pass on. Thank you for now.